A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 3rd chapter, verses 1 to 14. Maitreya Vacha Sadavid Vishatorevam Kalavaitriyamanaya Jamatusha Sarasya Visumahanati Chakrame. Maitreya continued. In this manner, the tension between the father-in-law and son-in-law, Daksha and Lord Shiva, continued for a considerably long period. Since the beginning of creation, the neophyte Vaishnavas, the Smartas, caste Brahmins, and the Shaivites, especially the impersonalists, have been fighting each other. And it all began at Daksha's Yajna. The Shaivites have cursed the Brahmins. What were the curses of the Shaivites? They were the first ones to curse. Yes? No.
The curse was
Nandishra.
Was saying that they would become very attached to material activities described in the Vedas?
Yes, flowery words of the Vedas. They're very, very good. Attached to fruitive activities because they're bewildered by the flowery words of the Vedas. Yes, Prashanta?
They'll be deprived of transcendental knowledge of the soul.
Deprived of transcendental knowledge. Lose their intelligence, vipanati, vipanati. And lastly, you remember Satyavat? Yes. Sang smarantu, revolve in the cycle of birth and death. So what were the curses of the Brahmins? How did the Bhrigu curse the Shaivites? Yes.
They become atheists.
Yes. Deviated from the proper Vedic scriptures. What is the proof that the Vedas are actually evidence? Yes. Those who do not follow the Vedas become like animals, basically. Prabhupada said that. And also, Bhrigamuni said that too. The proof is that you are, the proof that you are atheists, that the Vedas are perfect, that you are, you're blaspheming the Vedas. You're acting like animals. So then Daksha cursed Lord Shiva. A terrible curse. You will not get your share of prasadam. So for devotees, not to get prasadam, it's very difficult. But it was a blessing for Lord Shiva, because then he wouldn't have to eat with all the mixed devotees, the demigods. So this was what Prabhupada said, it's a blessing in disguise. He wouldn't have to associate with all these materialistic devotees, demigods. So while all this cursing and counter-cursing was going on, Shiva was simply tolerant, and finally he left the assembly to stop the further escalation of the fight. So we heard how Daksha's pride and his anger got him into so much trouble. And in these verses today, we will see how Sati gets herself into trouble, which will be fructified in the next chapter. So here Prabhupada says in the first paragraph, actually the first purport, he says that after answering Vidura's first question about the cause of misunderstanding between Daksha and Shiva, Maitreya will now explain the answer to the second question, why Sati gave up her life. So the cause of the misunderstanding was the cursing, counter-cursing. Shiva didn't stand up to offer respect, and Daksha cursed him. So that's the answer to Vidura's first question. And now this chapter will begin the answer to the second question, that why did Sati give up her life? So verse 2, when Lord Brahma appointed Daksha the chief of all the Prajapatis, progenitors of population, Daksha became very much puffed up. So what happens when you get a position and you become proud of your position? What are the results of pride in a position, Sankirtan? Oh, you were just... Okay, no problem. Become hard-hearted? Yes, this will be in the fourth chapter. It will say, How Daksha is so hard-hearted. When you become proud of your position, you become hard-hearted. This will be one of the results of his pride. What's another result, Sinkhu?
Indifference
to other persons.
To their situation.
So, and he's in a position of leadership. So when you're in a position of leadership, you become proud of that position. And these are the things that happen. Parvati. You think you can do anything with immunity. So you have power. Power corrupts. So in this case, power corrupted. The chief of all the Prajapatis is Daksha. All the sons of Brahma. And he is the chief. Yes. So in the Sanskrit, what is the Sanskrit word for this pride? Smaya. I mean, in this verse. What's another word? You have another word? Yeah, okay. Smaya. Dambo, Darpa, Bhagavad Gita says. Darpa, Dambo. Yeah, Darpa. Yeah, Darpa. Darpa, yeah. Darpa. Right. So here on the board I have a few more things that may... these are unnecessary creepers that grow up with our bhakti lata, and we have to be careful. This is a verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 19:159. Nisidhachar kutinati jivahinsang lava puja patishtari atta upasakagan. So actually on the flip chart I put that he has labha, puja, and pratishta, profit, adoration, and distinction. But then I started thinking about it, and I thought maybe also the other three too. Kutinati, jivahingsang, and nishidachar seem to apply also in the behavior of Daksha. Does everybody know what these words mean? Nishidachar means achar, you know, behavior. So forbidden behavior. Nishid, it's forbidden. Nisidachar means behavior unacceptable for a Vaishnava. And kutinati is diplomacy. Diplomacy. Duplicity, diplomacy. Fault finding. Yeah, all these things are under kutinati. What else? Finger pointing. Okay. Under kutinati. Jiva hingsang means violence to other living entities. Labha is, puja. Jiva hingsang. Hingsa is violence. You know, ahingsa means non-violence. So hingsa means violence. Jiva hingsang. Violence to other living entities. Then puja means attachment to worship, adoration. And labha, I got them mixed up up there. Oh no, I got them right. Yeah, over here it's different. Labha is profit. Puja, profit. You can look up there and you can see up on the flip chart. Puja is adoration. Labha is profit, and pratishtha, distinction or position. So these were Daksha's desires. In the purport, Prabhupada gives another result of pride. Prabhupada says when a man becomes too proud of his material possessions, he can perform any disastrous act. And therefore, Daksha acted out of false prestige. That's kind of like what Parvati said, that you think you can do anything if you have power, that there is no rules. I've heard people say, somebody say, nobody can tell me what to do. So this is one of the things. This was nobody. So including. Anyway, so these are some of the mentalities that grow up with these weeds that we have to get out. Now, Burijan made a really nice analogy here of his own about being puffed up. He says, it's just like a japati, which is full of hot air, no substance in the japati. I thought that was nice. Nice analogy. He says, we will lose everything, so why should we be puffed up? So Daksha was proud, powerful, And Burjan gave another comment that I really liked. He said, we get proud to cover all the psychological problems in the heart. Isn't it true? So this is just to cover the psychological problems. It's all bluff. So this is Burjan's comment. Verse 3. Daksha began a sacrifice named Vajpayee, and he became excessively confident of his support by Lord Brahma. He then performed another great sacrifice named Brihaspati Sava. So this purport is really nice. About three lines down. Second sentence. While performing these sacrifices, however, Daksha neglected great devotees like Lord Shiva. According to Vedic scriptures, the demigods are eligible to participate in yagyas and share the oblations, but Daksha wanted to avoid them. All sacrifices are intended to pacify Lord Vishnu, but Lord Vishnu includes all his devotees. Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the other demigods are all obedient servants of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, Lord Vishnu is never satisfied without them. But Daksha, being puffed up with his power, wanted to deprive Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva participation in the sacrifice, understanding that if one satisfies Vishnu, it is not necessary to satisfy his followers. But this is not the process. Vishnu wants his followers to be satisfied first. So remember the last, what Prabhupada said in the, I told you, the last said, no, you don't need to worship the demigods. Opposite. And now Prabhupada is saying, well, this is a misconception. You can just please Lord Vishnu without his followers. So here Prabhupada is giving another angle of vision, because devotees often go to the extreme end. So this is for us. These instructions are for us, that we don't disrespect the demigods also, and the devotees. So what level of devotional service? This is not the modes of devotional service. There's three levels of devotees. So which level is being described here? Yes? Kanishta. Yeah, the Kanishta thinks it's just me and my guru, or me and Krishna, and to hell with everyone else. But the Madhyama has a broader vision. The more we advance, then the broader our vision becomes. The Madhyama, he includes the devotees. He excludes the non-devotees of sorts, but the Uttama includes everyone. Devotees, non-devotees, they're all doing devotional service, and I'm not. Yes? So sadhana is also a service. Okay. Exemplary in sadhana, you're saying, means... Yeah, is included in Vaishnava Seva, is that what you're trying to say? Because by being an example, most important service is to be an example. I would agree. Right. Yes. I go to Mangalarti not because I want everyone to see that I'm a good devotee and I'm going, but because... Just to please, give a good example. Good. So here there's a quote by Lord Krishna to Uddhava. Prabhupada quotes here in the purport, Mad bhakta puja pyatika. Worship of my devotees is better than worship of me. Similarly, in the Shiva Purana, it is stated, best mode of worship is to offer oblations to Vishnu. Better than that is to worship devotees of Krishna. Thus, Daksha's determination to neglect Lord Shiva in the sacrifices was not fitting. So in the Padma Purana, there's a similar quote from Lord Shiva to Parvati. So I'll just recite that for you. It's, Aratananam sarvesham Vishnur aratanam param tasmat paracharam devi tadiyanam samarchanam. So, I would like you to give me some more quotes supporting this, that it's better to worship Krishna, it's better to worship the devotee than to worship Krishna, yes. Where? Adipuran? Yes, whoever says, I am Krishna's devotee, he is not. No. He is my devotee. Whoever says he's devotee of my devotee. And that was, I was reading in one of the diaries, I think it was Harisari's diary, that one devotee sent a poem to Srila Prabhupada. And the poem was saying, it was a poem to Krishna. And the poem said, "Your devotee is crying for you. Your devotee is begging you to pick him up. Your devotee is waiting for you to look at him." And he kept saying, "Your devotee." And Prabhupada said, "Okay, it's a nice poem. You should change it to 'Your servant. We are not devotees.'" Prabhupada said, "Change it to 'Your servant is crying for you. Your servant is begging you to pick up. Your servant is waiting for your glance.'" He says, "We are not devotees. We are servants." So I thought that was quite interesting realization, or actually a comment by Srila Prabhupada. So, any more verses to support this? Yes. Okay. Okay, Giriraj. Yes. Haridasavarya. Giriraj. Any other verses to support that it's better to serve the devotees? It's more pleasing to Krishna.
I don't know if it refers to the same one.
Yeah.
The preparations.
Yes, that was last year. It was Lord Vishnu speaking to the Kumaras, for Kumaras. And again, it will be repeated in this fourth canto. There are very similar verses in fourth canto about the Lord. Yes.
King Kushekar.
Okay. Remember me as a servant of the servant of your servant. Okay, now there's one very famous personality that we're forgetting here who said something like this. Yes? Yes, yes? Gopi Parakamalayor Das Das Anudas. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. That was his desire, to be servant of the servant of the servant. So the Madhyama, he wants to serve everyone. And this is the difference between the Kanishtha and Madhyama. The Madhyama has a service attitude. Madhyama wants to serve everyone. The Kanishtha thinks everyone should serve him. So these are different attitudes of the devotees. Service attitudes. I should serve, and the other one is everyone should serve me. Yes. What's that?
Pacifying Lord Vishnu, or pacified.
Is that in the purport?
Followers to be satisfied, pacified.
Vishnu wants his followers to be satisfied first?
No, the word pacified.
Is it?
It says that in the
really?
The Prabhupada says that.
In your purport, mine says satisfied. That's the difference in editing here, I guess. Let's see. Oh, all sacrifices are intended to pacify Lord Vishnu. I see.
Pacify Lord Vishnu.
Yeah, yeah.
So that implies that Lord Vishnu is not upset or is it.
Implies?
Well, he pacifies somebody who is in an angry
mood. Anyway, in one sense, we left him and we're here and we're doing all nonsense, so I guess in that sense. I mean, obviously, there's a reason. We should pacify Lord Vishnu. I mean, he could be upset. Of course, he's not. He's compassionate. But
yeah.
But also, Prabhupada, when you talk about pacify, this is also karmakanda. Karmakanda is not exactly. I mean, it's more to pacify. Then I will get something. It's like more like business, like what Daksha is doing. They want something in return. So yes, okay, I'll pacify him and I'll get what I want. I'll get my food. So there's a nice example of yes? 310, yeah. That's what I would think. Yeah. Yeah, pacifying would seem more like, okay, it's the mentality of the worshipper, sort of, that, okay, I'll pacify him and I'll get my thing. But the devotee is thinking, let me satisfy, let me please. Let me please him. That's the pure devotees. So it's quite interesting. Later on, the Prabhupada says, satisfy. You know, if you read on in the purport, he says, satisfy, rather than pacify.
Understand that he wants
Lord Vishnu is never satisfied without his devotees. So this is, so you may pacify him with your sacrifice, but you won't satisfy him unless you. Yes, yeah, yes, you can see that. So there is a nice example of in Krishna Lila. When Krishna and Arjuna were living together in Pandava Prastha, and Agni wanted to eat the forest. So Lord Krishna had his discus and he was killing everyone, all the demons who were trying to flee from the forest. And Arjuna made a network of arrows so nobody could escape, because Agni needed to eat everyone to get healthy. Again, he was sick. So then one demon, Maya Danava, was trying to escape the fire. And so Lord Krishna was after him. But he was a very smart demon. He ran and he threw himself at the feet of Arjuna. And Arjuna said, I will give you protection. So then Agni and Krishna gave up. They said, okay, you're safe. So then after the whole thing was over, then Maya Danava came to Arjuna. And he said, what service can I do for you? You saved my life. So Arjuna said, oh, go ask Krishna if you can do some service for him. So then he went and asked Krishna, what service can I do for you? And Krishna said, oh, if you want to please me, you go and do some service for Yudhisthira. So then he asked Yudhisthira and he built the beautiful assembly house for Yudhisthira. Agni, could be, yeah, the bows and arrows, the chariot. No, not the bows and arrows, the quiver, the chariot, okay. And so then this shows that by the mercy of the devotee, you get the service of Krishna. By the mercy of Krishna, you get the service of the devotee. So both of those, it's very sweet, actually. Very sweet, yes. Mangalarti? Which? Yasya Pashara, Bhagavat Pashara. Yes. Yasya Pashara, Nakatikatopi. Okay? Lada. So I would just like to recite for you a few verses from Kapiladev that we heard last year that are spoken by Kapiladev about this idea of being envious, thinking you're worshipping the Lord but being envious of other living entities. They're all in chapter 29 of Canto 3. This is verse 23. Dvishata parakaye mam manina vinadashina bhuteshu badavairasya namana shantimrichati. One who offers me respect but is envious of the bodies of others and is therefore a separatist never attains peace of mind because of his inimical behavior towards other living entities. 24. Aham uchshavacha dravyai kriyayot panayanake. My dear mother, even if he worships with proper rituals and paraphernalia, a person who is ignorant of my presence in all living entities never pleases me by the worship of my deities in the temple. And here's a really heavy verse. 26. Atmanascha parasyapi akarot yantaro taram tasya bhinadisho mityur vidate bhayamulpanam. As the blazing fire of death, I cause great fear to whoever makes the least discrimination between himself and other living entities because of a differential outlook. So their Sanskrit words here are very similar. Bhinna darshina. You're seeing separately, darshan, bhinna, separate. And this, again in another verse, bhinna drisho, you're seeing, your vision is separate. Yes? 1:5:14. Yeah, I know that too. Okay, 1:5:14, about separatist vision again. You see anything separate from me, Krishna says, it will just agitate your mind. That will be the reaction. So these are powerful verses. 1:5:14. That was his. Mine was 3:29, 23 through 26. 3:29. 3:29. 3:29. 23 through 26. Yes.
So is that talking about the Uttama vision or the Madhyama vision?
Is what talking about? Cumulative? He's talking about Kanishtha.
No, oh, okay. Right. But I mean, one who doesn't see. No.
Yeah, one who doesn't see. Yeah, would appear to be Uttama, because the Madhyama makes distinctions. But here it says one who is envious of others. So the Madhyama, he may make distinctions, but it's not out of envy.
Was there a connection between Bhinna and Dvandva?
Bhinna means separatist, and Dvandva. Dvandva means duality. So separatist and duality, it would appear the same to me. Adi Purusha in Sanskrit, what's the connection between Dvandva and Bhinna? Duality and separatist. So if you see difference, then you're seeing in duality. You're in duality.
Right. And duality, like all over the Bhagavad Gita, is what keeps us here in this world.
Yes, icha, dvesha. Yeah, he's seeing duality according to Krishna. But he's not seeing duality according to the material world, right?
And then what's Uttama seeing?
And he's seeing no duality according to
Krishna.
What's that?
He's better than Krishna.
No, his vision. Yeah. No, he's seeing that everything is connected to Krishna except me, isn't it? And he sees everything. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, at least he's acting. He's behaving on that platform, beyond duality. As far as in Mayapur, there was some discussion. That he is on the level of Nishta starts Madhya Madhikari. The level of Nishta high, Madhyam is actually very high if you're actually realized on that platform, and if you can also act on that platform before you realize it. But yeah, whoa, everybody's excited. Okay, Adi Purusha, and then yeah, Beda means difference, and Abheda means non-difference.
I was saying that sometimes
similarity.
As devotees, we...
Vikara.
Yeah.
Vikara. Vichara and vikara.
Vikara means separating matter from spirit, basically.
Separating.
Sometimes when we get into, this conflict, we're looking at all the differences. Between devotees. Looking at all the similarities. 99% of the things are similarities, but we look at the...
Yeah.
I'm trying to make a relationship between Dvandva and all that. And it's not Dvandva to have a Madhyama consciousness.
No. No. It's not the Dvandva they're talking about in Bhagavad Gita.
Okay.
I mean, there's. Anyway, everything can be used in the service of Krishna, even Dvandva. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, I shouldn't have said that. But who is that? One of those Narottam Das Thakur, or one of those people, says kama, krodha, lobha. You can use all these in Krishna's service. Narottam Das Thakur. Okay.
It may be dangerous to.
But yes, it is dangerous. Yeah, yeah.
Just when we're trying to give up the money itself, we can use it all.
Yeah, I know. That's why I shouldn't say. It's dangerous to say you can use anger in Krishna's. It's dangerous to say you can use any of these things. Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada. So that, yes, this is dangerous. It's not for we're not on this level. So Krishna is always expressing. Actually, often he expresses that the devotee is better than me, and often he wants to make the devotee more glorified than himself and better than himself. So the examples are Ambarish Maharaj, especially. That he wanted to show Durvasa Muni that Ambarish can do something I cannot do. You want to be forgiven, you have to go to him. I cannot help you. So this is the beautiful mood of the Lord that we're seeing also Prabhupada's explaining in the purport here. So I have a nice little quote here. A few nice little quotes. In 7th canto, 9... chapter, verse 42. There's a really beautiful purport. if you ever want to know about being servant and the servant, Prabhupada quotes Gopi Partu, Parakalaya Dasa Dasa Dasa. One should not be proud of becoming directly the servant of the Lord. Rather, one must seek a pure devotee, servant, and engage oneself in the service of such a servant. Prabhupada says, the more one becomes servant of the servant, the more one becomes perfect in devotional service. Very nice statement by Srila Prabhupada. The more you become servant of the servant, the more you become perfect. This is perfection. This is also injunction of Bhagavad Gita. Where do we find this in Bhagavad Gita? Prabhupada used a very interesting verse to prove this. Evam parampara praptam imam raja shayo vidu. This proves that you should be servant of the servant. So then, Prabhupada quotes Narottam Das Thakur. Tade chana sevi bhakta sanivas. Let me serve the lotus feet of devotees of the Lord and let me live with the devotees. Janame janame hoi eya vilash. Following Narottam Das Thakur, one should aspire to be servant of the Lord's servant life after life. Then the whole purport, just Prabhupada quotes one devotee after another. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, Tumi to Thakur, tomora kukur, bolaya jana hamare. O Vaishnava, please consider me your dog. And Prabhupada says, one must become the dog of a Vaishnava, a pure devotee, for a pure devotee can deliver Krishna without difficulty. Krishna se tomar, Krishna didi paro, tomara shakati ache. Krishna is the property of his pure devotee. And if we take shelter of a pure devotee, he can deliver Krishna very easily. So it's a beautiful purport all about being servant of the servant in the seventh canto. Then again, in Madhya 5:23, Prabhupada says, according to the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is better to be a servant of the servant of God. One should not try to serve Krishna directly. Narottam Das Thakur confirms, Chariya Vaishna Seva Nishtara Payachikeva. Unless one serves a liberated Vaishnava, he cannot attain liberation by directly serving Krishna. So these are nice quotes to remember and always keep in mind. Verse 4. While the sacrifice was being performed, many Brahmarshis, great sages, ancestral demigods, and other demigods, their wives, all very nicely decorated with ornaments, attended from different parts of the universe. So it's a big social event. The Brahmarshis are going, the Devarshis are going, the Pichis are going, the Devatas, everybody's going. Brijan again makes a very nice comment here. He says, in the Vedic culture, there's a mixture of the social and the spiritual. Because the social side should be made parallel with spiritual advancement. Nowadays, you think about people's social life, what do they do? If they're not devotees, what do they do for social life? Yes, they break the four regulative principles. This is social life, right? If you go to a party or something, then that's what you do. Intoxication, meat eating, licit sex. So this is the social life of Vaishnava. So here is the actual social life is being shown in Srimad Bhagavatam. You go to a sacrifice. And that's what Sati wanted to do. We'll see. So it's to please Vishnu. But here Brijan says there's a social side to it as well. You get dressed up, you speak to your friends, you go meet everyone, you socialize. So Sati saw this. That all the socialites of the universe were going, and she felt left out. Verses 5 to 7. The chaste lady Sati, the daughter of Daksha, heard the heavenly denizens flying in the sky conversing about the great sacrifice being performed by her father. When she saw that from all directions the beautiful wives of the heavenly denizens, their eyes very beautifully glittering, were near her residence and were going to the sacrifice, dressed in fine clothing and ornamented with earrings and necklaces with lockets. She approached her husband, the master of the Bhutas, in great anxiety, and spoke as follows. So she's a teenager, her father's having a party, and she wants to go. Verse 8, Sati said, My dear Lord Shiva, your father-in-law is now executing great sacrifices, and all the demigods, having been invited by him, are going there. If you desire, we may also go. So first she's asking that, you know, you can go to the sacrifice, can't you? She's not saying, I want to go. She's being very indirect here. First thing, it's nice, there's a big sacrifice and you can go. Verse 9. I think that all my sisters must have gone to this great sacrificial ceremony with their husbands just to see their relatives. I also desire to decorate myself with ornaments given to me by my father and go there with you to participate in that assembly. So purport, near the middle of the purport, she wanted to go to her father's house just as her other sisters might have done and meet them and enjoy social life. Here she specifically indicated she would decorate herself with the ornaments given by her father. Why ornaments given by her father? Shiva didn't give. She didn't give her anything. She did not say she would decorate herself with the ornaments given by her husband because her husband was callous about all such matters. So sometimes devotee women have this problem that the husband was a brahmachari for so many years and he doesn't know how to behave socially and all these things. So this is...
He may just be cheap.
Yeah, I know one. I remember one new couple. He just got married. They were going traveling Sankirtan, and you know, like whenever he used to have a brahmachari traveling party, he would buy them bananas if they got hungry. So he was trying to do that. I mean, I was on that party, I remember now. And it was a women's party, and bananas? We're not brahmacharis, you know. Anyway, so he doesn't understand. He did not know how to decorate his wife and take part in social life, because he was always in ecstasy with thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to the Vedic system, a daughter is given a sufficient dowry at that time of her marriage, and therefore Sati was also given a dowry by her father, and the ornaments were included. It is also the custom, the husband gives some ornaments, but here it is particularly mentioned that her husband, being materially almost nothing, could not do so. Materially nothing, Lord Shiva, right? That's how he appears. And that's what Daksha's thinking also. That's, I gave my daughter to this bum who sits under the tree and puts on ashes. So he was thinking like that Shiva, I'm very rich and Shiva's poor. And she will correct her father in the next chapter about that misconception. So then Prabhupada says, it was fortunate for Sati that Lord Shiva did not take the ornaments from his wife and spend them for ganja, because those who imitate Lord Shiva in smoking ganja exploit everything from household affairs. They take all their wives' property and spend on smoking, intoxication, and similar other activities. So this is fortunate for Sati. She didn't have such a husband like the others who worship Lord Shiva have, which is a fact. They just smoke the whole day. They don't work. They don't make money. And their wife has her dowry, so they take it and spend it. So here in the paragraph, are there paragraphs in this verse? What verse are we on anyway? We're on verse. Anyway, I found a sentence in the purport. Maybe I'm in the wrong one. It's near the beginning. About 5 lines down. In Sanskrit, the word for woman is stri, which means one who expands the field of material enjoyment. So I thought that was an interesting comment by Srila Prabhupada, because Prabhupada commented on that in one lecture, how women expand your life. So he says, I am one, then I get married, I become two, and then I become 3, 4, 5, and then I keep expanding like that. So also there's a verse in fifth canto that describes this expansion. 5, 5, 8. Pungsa striya mitni bhava metam tayor mitohitaya granti mahu atokihakshata sitapta vita janasya maha yamaham mameti. So the expansions, first ato griha. First you must have a house. Kshetra, land. Sutta, children, apta, relatives, friends, and finally, vitta, for all of it, wealth. So these are the expansions of Sri. So Sati was no different. In fact, she is the original one. So therefore, she has these desires. But Shiva, he was in a far superior level of enjoyment. She wants to enjoy on one level, but he's on another level of enjoyment. So therefore, he couldn't understand what level of enjoyment she wants to be on. It's quite different. So Brihadaranyaka Prabhu gave a nice example that wealthy people, they live on a much higher level of enjoyment than poor people do. So this is an example of Lord Shiva. He's on the highest level of enjoyment. That he's always meditating on Lord Sankarshan. So Shiva, actually he's very powerful, but he lives very simply. Because he doesn't have, we heard in the first or second chapter, he just lives under a tree. And I remember I told this story, I think in the first canto, I'll tell it again, it's nice, about Shiva and Parvati and how they were living under the tree. And then Sati was telling Lord Shiva, I need a house. I've been living under this tree for so long. Why don't you build me a nice house? So then he did. Golden, marble, everything, pearls, beautiful house. So then they called the Brahmins to do the housewarming ceremony. Brahmins came, performed the sacrifice. They were ready to go into their house, but they had nothing to give the Brahmins in Dakshina. So they gave him the house. So that was the end of the house. Prabhupada tells a story. So this is, that's why they're still under the tree. Shiva didn't have any more money after he built the house. Yes?
The first part about the dowry is actually very important.
Yes, the dowry.
For our preaching, like in the area that we live here, actually most of India, the misconception has come up that the dowry is basically the property of the bride's father.
Mm-hmm.
It was clear in Vedic culture it was given to the bride.
It was given to the bride. Yes. That's what Prabhupada said. That's what Prabhupada said. Yes, completely corrupted. Actually, belonged to the bride.
It's
given to the woman. So in time of, like if her husband should die or he should leave, then she's got something. No, they just take it. The family that she goes into. Everywhere.
The bride's father wants a suitor.
Yeah.
So, yeah. He says, okay, I'll marry if you give me a suitor.
Yes,
recently,
that's
what
it.
What happened is that one person gave, because I think this happens pretty often, they'll give you the suitor, but they'll only make the first payment.
Oh, that's good.
Anyway.
Yeah, I remember I was reading in the paper one time, it said in Gujarat there was a drought, so they said, we'll marry you if you give us a tank of water every day. Tank load of water every day for the rest of the bride's life. So this was an interesting dowry, a tank load of water every day. So it's very bad in India. Even people commit suicide, girls commit suicide, or else they kill themselves after the marriage because they keep harassing them for dowry. Or else the people kill the girls if they don't give them the dowry.
Or after they got the dowry, they'll
be married. Yeah, right. It's just like, it's really bad now. It's very corrupted. Yeah.
That's why in Mama Sankita, they say that the husband produces up his wife's
very good
dowry.
Okay, in Mana Samhita it says the husband who uses up the wife's dowry goes to hell. So these are, because they knew what was going to happen. Yes? That's why husband shouldn't be maintained by the wife. Even if she has money. The husband. He should still work, okay? So it's Kali Yuga, so it's all, everybody. There's no rules. Everyone's given up. There's no culture. There's no rules. Kula dharma, all these dharmas, they're out the window. Sarva dharma prityaja.
Status and station.
Right, education. What did we learn last year? There's two qualities that they should both have, the bride and the groom. Character was one. Character, they should be of the same, and age. Age and character should be compatible. Should be compatible. Okay. So verse 10, my sisters, my mother's sisters, and their husbands, and other affectionate relatives must be assembled there. So if I go, I shall be able to see them, and I shall be able to see the flapping flags and the performance of the sacrifice by the great sages. For these reasons, my dear husband, I am very much anxious to go. So again, Virgin's comment, this is the way it works, that we have a plan to enjoy, or just even a little spark to enjoy, and if to fan that spark, what fans it is you see other people are doing it, other people are enjoying, so then you want to enjoy also. You see others, we want to do what they're doing. So by association, you pick up the desires of others. My son has many friends, so if one of his friends is doing something, then he'll also, oh, my friend's doing, I want to go and play soccer or whatever, whatever. So this is the same thing. It's a social. They're all having a sacrifice. Now I have to go also. Verse 11. Now this is a very interesting verse. This manifested cosmos, she's being very philosophical now, is a wonderful creation of the interaction of the three material modes, or the external energy of the Supreme Lord. And she is that external energy. This truth is fully known to you, yet I am but a poor woman, and as you know, I am not conversant with the truth. Therefore, I wish to see my birthplace once more. So this is for us. We are devotees. We know the philosophy. But sometimes when it comes time for application, philosophy goes out the window. Huh? Yes. Sometimes we preach very nicely to everyone. But if when it comes time to follow what we preach, then it may be very difficult for us to do that. So five lines down, Prabhupada is paraphrasing what Sati is saying. The illusion of accepting the perverted reflection, the material cosmic manifestation, to be real is not present in you, because you are self-realized. For you, the attraction of social life, consideration someone is father, someone is mother, someone is sister, which are illusory relationships, is already over. But because I am a poor woman, I am not so advanced in transcendental realization. Therefore, naturally, these appear to me as real. So the wife's telling the husband, I know you're a pure devotee, and you don't need these things, but I'm not on your level. I need all this social life, and I need to see my family, and I need to go visit my relatives. I can't just stay here 24 hours a day like you doing all this. So this is applying to us. Only less intelligent persons accept this perverted reflection, now Prabhupada himself is speaking, of the spiritual world to be real. Those who are under the spell of the external energy accept this manifestation to be fact. Whereas those who are advanced, in spiritual realization, know that it is illusion. Actual reality is elsewhere in the spiritual world. So if we actually were realized in this concept, how would we live in this world? If we were actually having this philosophy, it would be very difficult to relate to everything. Actual reality is elsewhere. Of course, as devotees, we're meant to do this. So then she's speaking. But as far as I am concerned, I do not have much knowledge about self-realization. I am poor because I do not know the actual facts. I am attracted by my birthplace, and I want to see it. So she knows her problem, she even knows, but it's theoretical knowledge. It's very difficult to apply it. Prabhupada says, he's paraphrasing a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, one who has attraction for his birthplace, for his body, and for other such items mentioned in the Bhagavatam is considered to be like an ass or a cow. Which verse is that? Esyatma buddhi kunape tutatuke. So I'll recite it for you. This is 10, 84, 13. Yasyatma bhuti kunapetita tuke sati kalatra rishu pomaricheri. Petita bhuti salilena kahichi chanesha vigeshu sevagokara. So the exact Sanskrit words for her misconception are bhoma, ija, dhi. Bhoma means the land of your birth. Ija means you consider it worshipable. And dhi means that sort of intelligence. Bhoma, ija, dhi. So this is the misconception of sati. She's saying, I'm attached to my place of birth. So Prabhupada said in a lecture that people are willing to give up their lives for the land where they are born. But they don't know that actually this land has nothing to do with them. So this is bhoma ijati. They would rather worship the land, Prabhupada says, than worship Krishna. This is their worship, their puja. Nationalism. I am Indian, I am American, I am this, I am that. So how to counteract this misconception? Prabhupada gives a very nice solution for counteracting the misconception of being attracted to your land of birth. So what would be a very good solution, the perfect solution to this? Yes?
Travel a lot
and see many places. Make friends in all countries. Okay, well that's not exactly Prabhupada's yet. Yes, yes, that's it. That was Prabhupada. Tad dhamma, you want to love a land, love Vrindavan. That was his solution, Prabhupada's solution. There's a verse, tad dhamma Vrindavanam. So you want to worship somebody, worship Krishna. And if you want to worship some place, then worship Vrindavan. Make Vrindavan your home, your worshipable place, place of birth. So everyone wants to love some place. Prabhupada said, so love Vrindavan. Love Mayapur. Love the Dham. Very good. Because you're a Brijbasi, so you know these things. Yes. Okay. And those t-shirts, yeah?
Well, it's interesting on the practical level of the Iskcon.
Yeah, it really is.
I just went around the world.
Okay.
And
you just went on tour.
So, we hear this philosophy, but still Australians act like Australians.
Mm-hmm.
Kiwis act like Kiwis.
Yeah.
Yeah. French,
yeah.
Russian, especially Ukrainian. yeah, you know what I mean? So it's on a practical level, it seems that it's almost like, to use
yes, yes.
Whatever conditioning
yeah.
you have. And it seems
yeah.
that, again, perhaps on a practical level, because of this philosophy, because of hearing this philosophy, sometimes we may neglect. Mm. To understand how much the differences enter into our the differences in cultural
difference in culture
enter into our society and how much that impacts the way we relate to each other.
Wow.
I was in Italy just then. And so someone in Italy just externally, even the way they eat,
yeah.
is all different than someone from Japan is like
right.
And then we're all this international society, Christian consciousness.
Right.
So I guess it's time we have to understand this and make Vrindavan our whole place, but acknowledge that those other conditionings exist.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
well, Prabhupada appreciated the differences, actually. His philosophy, he was saying it's just like if you have a flower decoration. If you just have one flower, then it doesn't, not very pleasing. But if you have many, many colors, then it becomes beautiful. So that was his vision, was that all the different people, all the different colors, all the different races, all the different nations, if you put them together in Krishna's decoration, for the same purpose, they all become beautiful. It's not that we don't lose our flavor or individuality.
That would be impersonal.
Yeah, it would be impersonal. But at the same time, we don't give up our spiritual life. Yeah, it's very difficult to balance the two. We have to make a perfect balance. That we want to use, it's beautiful. We don't all want to start speaking like the Indians or in the same way, but it's beautiful when all the different flavors get together for Krishna. Yes. The Vedic paradigm. Dhoti-kurta. Yes.
So there seem to be difference of opinion. That some say spiritual work means downwards into practice, like everything is
right.
Based on that Vedic scenario or paradigm, which is now opinion.
But Krishna is very liberal in Bhagavad Gita. He says, okay, best is if you just always think of me. If you can't do that, do bhakti yoga, very strict, wear dhoti kurta, eat like this, eat like that. Can't do that, just work for me. Prabhupada built a house that the whole world could live in. So is the whole world going to wear dhoti and kurta? You think so?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I know people who say there's a good strong stream of devotees who would never think like that. It
yes.
It's a unified culture of the world. It's a cultural movement in the outer body. It's a cultural movement.
Right.
So there is the liberalization of cultural movement. That means that culture, the Vedic culture, is going to cover everything.
Right.
And everything else disappears. And that's the real progress.
So wipe it all out and just.
What places are too cold?
She comes from Ireland. It's very cold.
Well, that's what the Prabhupada did. You could even argue that Prabhupada did.
Yeah, he wore a dhoti, actually. But anyway, it's a matter of... There are different levels, and different levels are accepted by Lord Krishna.
We should accept the principles.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's a good point.
For example, perhaps... 4.834, that's like the main principle of Krishna consciousness. So that's...
For 834. Is that in here?
That.
4.834,
I would say that's Vedic culture. You know, the details go like this, but Vedic culture 4.834. Every man should act like this. When he meets a person more qualified than himself, he should be very
free. Oh, 4.834, yeah, okay.
When he meets someone less qualified than himself, he should be compassionate.
Yeah, right.
When he meets someone equal to himself, he should be
yes.
In this way, one's never affected by threefold.
Yes. And actually... Yeah, that's it's true, the principles. And you won't care what they're wearing if they're like that. If they have this mood, then you say, you know, then it doesn't matter, the external.
Or I mean, you should make a definition between principles and details.
Details, right.
That's certainly,
and that was a hang-up that the Godbrothers of Prabhupada had, that Prabhupada didn't have. Prabhupada, he could change the details. He wasn't hung up with it, that, you know, it has to be this, it has to be that, it has to be that. But he was very liberal on that. And therefore, he could spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Now, if he had been very perfect and very, you know, rigid, it would never have spread. Yeah.
Yeah, well, change the details, but that's it now. Don't change any more further.
Yes.
That's the argument. Yeah. Change the details, but he didn't exactly show in China how it's going to work, how it's going to work.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So in Kali Yuga, the preacher has to have special intelligence according to time, place, and circumstance, like Srila Prabhupada did. That it's time, place, and circumstance. This is the essence of preaching in Kali Yuga. That according to the different societies, you have to preach. Yeah.
Ramakrishna Goswami wrote a letter in Thailand saying that I should use the principles of utility. That's what the Buddhists do.
The principle of?
Utility.
Utility?
Yeah. And it's like the needful.
Ah.
Based on
right.
The people do.
Like yeah.
In the sense of new inventions, new ways of approaching.
Yes.
They put the return of the Buddhists that they do that.
Yes. And Prabhupada, that Christian, he always quotes the Christian preachers who is trying to preach about you're going to go to hell to the coal miners. Remember that? You know that, right? Okay. There's no newspaper in hell. Yes.
It's an important culture when you kind of torture, and then how do you get nice fruit-bearing trees?
Yeah.
You do it. It's called grafting.
Grafting.
Sapling growing.
Uh-huh.
When you find a sample of very good tree which bears wonderful fruits, and you cut the sapling and graft on the branch from a very good tree. And then it gives very nice fruits. But you don't like destroy the sapling. So in the same way, the sculpture may be more effectively transferred by grafting into already what's on the roots already there.
So that's a nice.
We tend to throw away everything and we come out some fruit because we have not been brought up in that system.
Yes. That's a very nice example. Did you make it up yourself? Yes. Adi Purusha made up a very nice example about a sapling, that it's better to graft it onto the branch of a very nice tree rather than just throw everything away. So in the same way, Vedic culture. We don't throw everything away, but we graft what we have.
Because it seems to me that we tend to absorb more of the culture concept by extending the field of movement. And perhaps, as you mentioned, the conditioning of all the culture in the background seems to condition more further as we move into
the world. Yes. Most people's heads are
fine. Because if you stay with your families in your country, even for the sake of Christian, it's harder to get rid of the.
Okay, so Madhavendra Puri Prabhu recommends living a few years in India to help get rid of the effects of your
own
background. Yes, it's helpful if you get the right association. You get the right association. Okay, so we'll go to verse 12. Are we ready for verse 12? Oh, never born. O blue-throated one, not only my relatives, but also other women, dressed in nice clothes and decorated with ornaments, are going there with their husbands and friends. Just see how their flocks of white airplanes have made the entire sky very beautiful. So now she is getting beyond the point of tolerating. Because, you know, even, okay, my relatives, okay, they can go, but other people, they're not my relatives. They're going to my father's house, so why not me? Look at, this is her argument. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read it. I'm going to read some of the purport. Six lines down. Sati wanted to impress upon her husband that even those who are not related to her father were also going, to say nothing of herself, who was intimately related with him. So then blue-throated, Prabhupada gets into the why she's calling him blue-throated. So what's the reason? Why is she saying blue-throated one? There's something behind it. Adi Purush? Adi Purush. Adi Purush. Yeah?
He was thinking about the welfare of others. And
yes. Yes. Yeah. I mean, you're so compassionate. And this is, you drank the whole ocean of poison for others. And I'm your wife. Why not? No, he didn't drink it, it says? He kept it in his throat. Well, in a sense, he drank it, and in a sense, he didn't drink it. Yes. Yes, so we don't want to quarrel on a few words here. Prabhupada says, Lord Shiva drank all the ocean water. In other words, he could drink such a great amount of poison for others' benefit. Now, since his wife was personally requesting him to go to her father's house, even if he did not wish to give that permission, he should do so out of his great kindness. So, you know, the wife says, you know, you're always doing something for other people. What about me? You know, you're always having these meetings. My son says that to me sometimes. You're always teaching, you're doing this, you're doing that. What about me? You should just stay home all day and cook for me. So anyway, this is some of the feelings that go on here. Verse 13, another argument. O best of the demigods, how can the body of a daughter remain undisturbed when she hears that some festive event is taking place in her father's house? Even though you may be considering, I have not been invited, there is no harm if one goes to the house of one's friend, husband, spiritual master, or father without invitation. And the last verse, verse 14. O immortal Shiva, please be kind towards me and fulfill my desire. You have accepted me as half of your body, therefore please show kindness towards me and accept my request. So I'll just review. I found about five arguments of Sati, her arguments. The first one, I desire to see my relatives. I want to dress up. I want to socialize. So that was the first thing. And second, I'm not a pure devotee. I need this. I want to see the place of my birth. The third argument, blue-throated one, you're merciful to everyone. Why not me? The fourth one, one may go uninvited, even to the house of their father. And the fifth one, I'm half of your body. You should be merciful. So these are the five arguments that Sati has given, and tomorrow Lord Shiva will shoot all her arguments down. But still, even though she's defeated, she won't listen. So this is typical Kali Yuga. So any questions or comments? What? Yeah, this wasn't. That's true. You're right. But in previous ages, if a scholar was defeated, then they would surrender and take initiation. But now, forget it. Okay, Sankirtan, you had a...
Well, just yesterday we were kind of wondering which Shiva are you talking about?
Which Shiva?
Yeah, the Shiva in Kailash.
Oh, Shiva, yeah.
Sali Sindon, or...
Yeah.
It seems clear, it's the one who is born from Lord Brahma.
The one who is born from Lord Brahma. But he may also live in Kailash and also outside, too.
Yeah,
oh, I don't know. I'll read to you from Brahma Samhita one day. Shiva Tata. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there is a purport. There's a purport here by Srila Prabhupada. I think it's verse number 7. It appears the residence of Lord Shiva was not on this planet, but somewhere in outer space. Otherwise, how could Sati have seen the airplanes coming from different directions toward this planet and heard the passengers talking about the great sacrifice being performed by Daksha? So that's one angle. I mean, of course, it's what Prabhupada says. But if you go to Haridwar, everyone over there will say, here's the place where Daksha had his sacrifice. You go up to Haridwar, they will show you the place that was in Haridwar. And that also could be true, because if Lord Shiva is living in Kailash, which is in the Himalayas, they would have to go by airplane over to Haridwar to get to, you know, past Kailash. If they were coming from the heavenly planets, they would pass Kailash and land in Haridwar for the sacrifice.
So
interesting, huh? Because I was reading these books on India last summer, and I saw Haridwar, place of Daksha Yajna. So that was nice for me to stumble. I stumbled on it, actually. Yes? Okay, different kinds of pride. Smaya, Darpa, Dambha. I think in Bhagavad Gita there is a distinction between Dambha and Darpa, which I don't exactly remember offhand. Somebody can enlighten me about the distinction between Dambha and Darpa. And you're looking up in your Sanskrit dictionary? Are you looking up in Bhagavad Gita? Oh, pride, arrogance, and conceit. Abhiman, that's also another type of pride. All three of them. Mm-hmm. This is 16:4, Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 16, verse 4. Read the purport. Okay, which one is this?
This is the first.
Dambha, the demoniac want to make a show of religion and advancement in spiritual science. Then?
Darpa
or arrogance?
They are always arrogant or proud and possessing some type of education or so much wealth.
They're also arrogant and proud and possessing some type of education and wealth. Okay, Dambha is show, and Darpa is pride in having something.
And they are
Beautiful statement, huh? So this is abhiman. So there's a third one, abhiman, that they want respect from others, but they do not command respect. Something like, what did you say? Is that what you said?
They desire to be worshipped and demand respect.
They demand respect, but they do not command respect. Okay. Yes.
I would like to explore this concept of servant of servant.
Servant of servant. Okay.
And in the context of... on one side, we have this clear understanding, be servant of servant. Usually it's translated into servant one's true master. Now, followers of Srila Prabhupada, disciples, there is a kind of a clear idea, servant refers to Srila Prabhupada. Now, we hear more and more this guru groupism is not really wanted.
The what?
Guru groupism.
Guru groupism, I never heard of that.
No,
what does that mean?
A lot of articles were written in one of the magazines by
who?
By Bhakti Vikash Maharaj.
Bhakti Vikash.
It's printed in the Congregation Preaching Magazine, Pantheon. And there's a whole concept that if grand disciples to the Prabhupada line up in the groups, that leads to groupism,
guru groupism.
And which is then creating disunity as a movement.
Causes disunity.
Even saying, focusing on Srila Prabhupada is more about it creates some disunity because there is other Vaishnava groups around.
Right.
They're not really able to cooperate. Generally, I see that's kind of how we reconcile our servant.
Well, it's yes.
If you can understand, why is the outcome such that there is frictions amongst Vaishnavas, within this groupism, my guru, your guru, and my area, your area, and then. Or we have the Sonal and all Sonal Sonal Acharya and thing. That was clear proof. It was not properly understood. My question then, do we really understand that it means servant, especially in one realm?
Right. My first comment would be that there are many misunderstandings and misconceptions of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And our philosophy is Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And all three are important, just as important, in the life of a devotee. So therefore, serving the servant means you serve the guru, you serve the sadhus, and you have the shastra also. All three should be worthy of respect and worship. This should be applied. Servant of the servant means not only the guru, but also the sadhus. And often if someone, this is the problem, I did a little seminar on this once, that what happens if you just think guru is everything? And you forget sadhu and shastra. What happens if you think sadhu is everything, you neglect guru and shastra? Or if you think shastra is everything, and you neglect the other two. So what happens? And so this is what happens. That you have this guru groupism, you have this and that. So, I mean, that would be my comment on this, that there is a misunderstanding of the philosophy.
So it's still a question within me. Okay, my service target. What is the service? Is it the institution? That's also kind of a tricky statement within the whole three of the dynamics. You have institutional consciousness, which is questioned by some persons also, that you should get rid of the institutional consciousness and see as service of the Vaishnavas.
Yeah, because what is the institution anyway? It's just the Vaishnavas.
Now, if there's other persons who are synchronized with the level of Prabhupada,
So what?
How do we reconcile, or how do we maybe unite a movement which is meant for?
So again, the differences are being emphasized: unity and diversity. But there's more diversity than there is unity. And so how do we get the unity? That's your question?
Yeah. I wanted to bring it more back to this. Maybe there's something wrong with our understanding of discernment mentality.
Yes?
And I like when you say that there are misconceptions perceptions going around.
Yeah, so Bhagavatam.
Concept then, you say, okay, that's actually a misconception.
Yes.
Unless a problem stops being a problem once we see it as a problem.
Right.
Then it stops.
I lost you. Anyway,
do you...
Okay.
If a person has a disease and he doesn't see, then he has a problem.
Oh, okay, now I got you.
He has a medicine. He takes a medicine.
All right.
But if it's seen, well, that's our philosophy, no? And we kind of push that line, which then ultimately results in something which you don't really want.
Okay.
I just question that. I'm not saying that you really like it.
Yeah.
I was
So having toured all over the world, what would your comment be?
Well,
and seeing all the diversities.
Two things. One is, again, 4834.
4834. Okay.
Verse.
All right.
And then it pretty much reconciles everything.
So the principles are important.
And then the only reason you would follow that verse would be in the case of someone actually committing aparadha.
Okay.
And we in this time, we might consider certain ways that people look at Srila Prabhupada to be at least in our angle, which the concepts we might not associate with them. But otherwise, mm-hmm. we follow that concept. Mm-hmm. But then you can look at another way. You can say that, okay, this kind of will unite by Srila Prabhupada, following Srila Prabhupada, right? Then you can say the body and math institutions would unite by emphasizing Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakura. But then you can say, well, that's going to leave out the Babajis. So then you can say, well, we'll put on the main pedestal Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but that will include them. And then you say, well, what about all the other Vaishnavas? So then you can say Lord Krishna. But then that might leave out, Lord Krishna. But what about the Christians and the Jews? And finally, the main distinction that ultimately is there is atheists and theists.
Right.
Demons. We can work together with all other theistic organizations
right.
in the world
right.
to defeat atheism.
Yes.
And then we could unite perhaps with all of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakura's followers to defeat those who criticize Bhakti Siddhanta Thakura and our Shiksha Parampara.
Right.
So there's different ways to unite on different levels.
Mm-hmm. So that's a wonderful comment. Different ways to unite in different levels. Okay? Parvati.
I don't understand. The problem is that you can't see the tree because of the branches. Is that the problem?
Can't see the tree?
No, I don't think so.
Well, the problem is that we, in the Bhagavad, everywhere we see, in this whole book, there's so many purports about the spiritual master, and the position of the spiritual master, and serving the spiritual master. Right? All over the place, right? There's nothing here about like serving the DBC, or, I mean, at least specifically. But then we turn to an organization called ISKCON, and an institution, and we have Srila Prabhupada as a kind of tribe, and then we have all these other spiritual masters. And how should they be treated vis-a-vis the institution?
Spiritual masters within the institution? So, if it's remembered that, it's said in the Shastra, you follow your spiritual master's mission. You don't go somewhere, so the mission is there. So, all the people who have that same mission, and then if some spiritual master is kind of going off like in a separatist way, then it should be the duty of the other devotees to point it out.
Okay, does anybody have any other questions? Yes, or comments? Prashanta. There are conflicts here between serving the institution, serving the guru, serving the temple, serving the whatever, department.
This is due mostly to our inner contamination of seeing things in an impersonalistic way.
So Prashanta attributes our problems to our inner impersonalism, seeing things in an impersonalist way. And that's why we have a problem resolving all the different services.
When we think in an impersonalistic way, then we have trouble because we start relating with positions.
We relate to positions or external appearance, which we're trying to... This chapter is telling us you don't judge by the externals. I mean, this lila.
So what we have to work on, at least what I feel I have to work on, is that to try to lock out these impersonalistic tendencies within the mind and heart and relate with persons, and in this way understand that this comes a place where we come together to work, because Prabhupada said it's coming in association, it's Sangha. You know, we come together. If there is not that Sangha, then we will be much less powerful in carrying out the mission.
Mm-hmm.
So we come together to work, we come together like that. But when we're doing that work, we are not working for the machine. We're
right.
not working for a machine.
Right.
We're not serving the institution.
Mm-hmm.
We are serving the
Parampara.
We're
serving Parampara, Srila Prabhupada.
And we are, and this in accordance with our own Diksha Guru, with whom
they'll be happy.
Guidance,
right.
Like that. And the main point comes when I take responsibility for being a servant and not wait until my positional authority tells me.
Right.
Then the problem is there. Then I relate to a machine. But if I take the responsibility in my life for following the instructions of the Parampara, for becoming one of the beings, then I'm a person, and ISKCON is a place where I interact, I live. Some places in ISKCON I like more, some places I like less, according to what the personalities are emphasizes. I emphasize more the details or more the principles.
Right.
I prefer to be in the places where the principles are emphasized.
Right. Okay, so that's a very nice comment. That to work with your inner life, and if you yourself become a personalist and take responsibility for being a servant of the Parampara, then these problems vanish. And there may be some places you prefer, which are more the places that emphasize the principles rather than the details.
In your case,
yes, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying in your case. I'm not saying this is a generalization. I'm just saying this is your realization. Of course.
Is that something we're trying to work on, is that there's a concept that only one mood can prevail. And therefore there's internet wars constantly, you know, thinking that no, the Vedic culture should prevail, and that no, using a Vedic Christian service should prevail. But what other organizations have done, like the Catholic Church and Judaism, is they've allowed the diversity. They allow both to be there, but like in Catholicism, they have, you know, Franciscans and different orders to allow different flavors within, as long as they accepted the authority of the Pope. So, similarly, we haven't figured out how to do it yet. It's how allow.
Yes.
We could have less arguments and things if we weren't all fighting for our philosophy to be the top one of this. Allow for the principal bodies to be there and the Vedic laws to be there, and allow, as long as they're basically four regular intervals, 16 rounds, Krishna's screamer sounding like Prabhupada's hours before, you know,
even those who don't follow four regular principles, they can work for Krishna, as Krishna says, if you can't.
Well, I'm accepting the four regular principles, like in verse 3.
As a standard. For, okay.
I don't see how we can do without that. Having allowing that space, because people apply what they read according to their personal level of realization and attachments and detachments.
Right.
So talent that fit in the box people they use. We have to allow for people to apply according to their realizations. And
yes.
That means different kind of communities. Some people will love emphasizing how much more. Some people will love emphasizing this more, that more. And all of them are actually Krishna conscious.
But Prabhupada was so liberal. His mood, if we follow his mood, when he was in Tehran, he was saying, you chant Allah. You chant to Christians, he would say, you chant Christ's name. One Christian nun came to see Prabhupada, and Prabhupada, and she says, I'm chanting on these beads. And Prabhupada said, what are you chanting? He says, may Lord Jesus be merciful to me. And Prabhupada said, yes, he will be merciful to you.
and
it's a very nice prayer.
When we interact with some of these persons, Muslims, persons who are actually religious,
truthful,
we find that, wow, it's so similar to their internal experiences.
Yes. Yes, Manu Kanya was telling me she has a Muslim friend who is in her support group for disrupted marriages or something, I don't know, and the Muslim was inviting her to her house to eat. And so then Manu Kanya was saying, oh, I can't really eat because, you know, you eat meat. And she says, no, I'm vegetarian. In the Quran, there's a section or something she was quoting. No, I'm vegetarian. And Manu Kanya said, oh, but you eat onions and garlic. She says, no, that's also forbidden. And then she went to meet her. And then her friend hugged her and she said, you know, I think if you think about it, we have much more in common than we do. Difference. Yeah. Okay, they're insecure. Yeah. They need to, yeah. Okay, I'll give you one more example after that. Only, yes, that's it. The medium is expanded. Broader vision. And devotees. Yeah, the devotees. All the Vaishnavas. Every living entity. Yes. Yes.
Well, I associate a lot with Christians for about 6 weeks.
Who?
With different Christian beliefs.
Christians.
Actually, from all over the world, from all different religions. So I was talking to Satyananda Swami the other day about Christianity, and I was telling him that one of the main things I think that we have that they don't is Atma Tattva,
yes.
But he said something very interesting, which I'm still thinking about, which I'm deciding whether I agree or not. But he said, but that's not their process.
Uh-huh.
They don't require that, but they're more, bhakti oriented, and they don't require the Atma Tattva so much.
The Gyan. Well, Christ.
I agree with that, but it was an interesting point that he was appreciating that they have different processes. And I mean, the main problem that I saw with most of the people I was associated with is what's on their dinner table.
Yeah.
If they could just understand that simple point about... And I was at these were all people who were trying to bring peace to the world.
Yeah, right.
They had violence on their plate. And they wanted to set it to them, and they were like, they agree with
them. Yeah. But that was Prabhupada's main thing that he would say to Krishnas.
Otherwise, as someone said, you let the Muslims be Muslims.
But I think also, I would just say one more point, Sankirtan's point about being an example. And I can give you an example of how this worked. That one devotee who is now in Bhakti Shastri, one girl, I forget her name, from Mexico. So she was doing interfaith preaching. So she said they went to one place where all these Christian groups were there and they were all making their presentations. And they were like hellfire, brimstone, you got to surrender to Christ or else you're going to hell. And then it came time for the devotee to speak. And he quoted, Chunadapi Sunichena Tororiva Sahishna, with such a difference. Then afterwards, one of these Christian, really hellfire and brimstone preachers came up to her, and she was really scared. Oh, what's he going to tell me? He said, well, I really appreciate how you preached. so this is the example. Example is... But then they see, we're all like beating everybody to death if they don't become Christian, and you're just... Yeah.
It's actually what we are reading about now.
Yeah.
Because Bhatishiva,
yes.
He was insulted, and we can remember that he's in charge of promoted ignorance. So he could have just withdrawn some of this tamagun from Daksha.
Yeah. He could have done so many things.
But he just let it go. He let them exercise
exercise their own
free will. Yeah, he let it happen. Okay, Madhavan Puri.
Yes, it is regarding that discussion we had in this way between Madhyam and Uttama.
Okay, Madhyam and Uttama.
There's a nice quote in 11 to 46.
This is what?
Srimad Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm.
11 to 46. The first thing is the role of Madhyam Adhikari.
Goal of Madhyam Adhikari.
Then the Jyotishakur says a Madhyam Adhikari cannot at any time perceive the presence of the Supreme Lord within all living beings.
Okay, the Madhyama cannot perceive Super Soul within living beings.
Whereas Uttama Adhikari, however, he acts on the circumstance platform to carry out the role of mission, is aware that every jiva is going to appear fully as Krishna consciousness.
Okay, so the Uttama Adhikari, he sees the spiritual nature of all living entities. Everyone is. Although he acts on the Madhyama, he actually has the vision of Super Soul and how everyone's spiritual. The Uttama. Madhyama cannot perceive. Okay. We do. We say the Madhyama can see?
He can see the Super Soul and,
I don't know.
Oh,
he loves the Lord. He worships.
Yes, he cannot see the presence of Super.
Yeah, he cannot see. I yeah. What do you say?
And then,
oh, okay, well, let's sit. Okay.
He says, therefore, although devotee next to him engage 4 different types of behavior, as mentioned in the first, namely worship of the Lord,
okay,
friendship with the devotees, preaching to the innocent, rejection of the demons, is not necessarily on the second class platform, since in Uttama Adhikari may also exhibit these symptoms to carry out the Lord's mission.
Yeah.
And then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta sums it up by saying, the duty of Madhyam is to assist the Uttama.
Duty of the Madhyam is to assist the Uttama. Okay.
Assist.
The Uttama. Yes, last comment of the day by Brajbihari Prabhu.
Well, how about if I read it?
Okay. Let's hear it.
Such a nice letter.
Okay.
Here's a Trey Richard who had written.
Oh, I know this letter, yeah.
We call out about impersonalism. We fight with each other because of impersonalism. That seems to be.
Yes.
The problem with the letters book is that you don't see the letter that Prabhupada received, which can really help understanding how Prabhupada preached.
So, Trey Rishi is complaining the devotees are impersonal.
It's not so much that because there may be some faults in our godmothers and god sisters, or because there may be some mismanagement or lack of cooperation.
But we should have another microphone.
It's due to being impersonalist. No, it is the nature of the living condition to always have some fault. Even in the spiritual world, there is some fault in envy. Sometimes the gopis will quarrel with Krishna over Krishna's favor, and once Krishna was so much attracted to Radharani that by mistake he tried to dump the bull instead of the cow. And sometimes when the gopis used to put on their dress and makeup for seeing Krishna, they would be too much hasty and smear kumkum and mascara in the wrong places, and their ornaments and dresses would appear as if small children having time to dress themselves, and they were not very expert like that. There are so many examples, but it is not the same as material fault or material envy. It is transcendental, and it is all based on Krishna. Sometimes when one gopi would serve Krishna very nicely, the others would say, oh, she has done so nicely. Now let me do better for pleasing Krishna. That is envy, but it is transcendental, without malice. So we shall not expect that anywhere there is any utopia. Rather, that is impersonalism. People should not expect that even in the Krishna consciousness society, there will be utopia. Because devotees are persons, therefore there will always be some lacking. But the difference is that they're lacking because they have given up everything to serve Krishna, money, jobs, reputation, wealth, maybe education, everything. Their lacking has become transcendental. Because despite everything they may do, their topmost intention is to serve Krishna. One who is engaged in devotional service, despite the most abominable action, is to be considered saintly because he's rightly situated. The devotees of Krishna are the most exalted persons on the planet, better than kings, all of them. So we should always remember that, and like the bumblebee, always look for the nectar or the best qualities of the person, not like the utopians, or like the flies, who always go to the open sore to find the faults in the person, because they cannot find any utopia, or because they cannot find anyone without fault.
they want to become void, merge, nothing. That they think is utopia, to become void of personality. So if there is sometimes slight disagreements between devotees, it is not due to impersonalism. It is because they are persons. And such disagreements should not be taken very seriously. The devotee is always pessimistic about the material world, but is very optimistic about the spiritual life. So in this way, you should consider that anyone engaged in devotional service is always the best person. And then the last point for our Sankirtan. I am very pleased that you were assisting your godbrother so nicely. Yes, this is our real position. We are servants of the servants of the servants.
Okay. So that means everyone.
Bombay, 4th February 1972.
Actually, one time, that reminds me, I had a little talk briefly with Radhanath Swami. And he was telling me how he felt that he was the servant even of the non-devotees. And he was expanding it so much, and I said, well, I can see how you could be servant of the devotees, but servant of the non-devotees? He said, yes. He says, because, I said, how is that? How do you see that? I asked him, I just can't, I don't feel that way, that I'm servant of the non-devotees. Even hard to be servant of the devotees. So I said, how do you feel like that? She said, because every time I give prasadam to a non-devotee, I feel that he's helping me in my service to Prabhupada. So I thought that was a gem. It's very nice. So I'm the servant of the non-devotees. They're also devotees. They're helping me in my service to Prabhupada, because Prabhupada wanted to distribute food. He wanted to distribute all these things. So if I give something to them, then they're helping me in my service to Prabhupada. So we can end with that. Is that Madhyam or is that Uttam? I don't know. Yes.
Mother Sati.
Mother Sati.
It's hard to acknowledge and to accept that she could get rid of those five reasons.
Yes.
You know, which are quite, I would say, they were fine. So it must be a Leela, I guess. Because she's
She's acting her position. She's acting who she is. She's not pretending.
Yeah, but can she be,
couldn't she be a pure devotee?
Then she's Prakriti, she's like mother of nature, person of mind.
Yeah, she's external energy, she's Prakriti, she's all these things. And you know, she's got a husband, and that's how it is. It's the same with Parvati as it is with us. It's not different. Where do we get it from? Why? That's what she said. She said, I know, it's all illusion. I know the laws, I know all this, but still.
She has no vigyan at all.
Well, in this case, I wouldn't say at all, but in this particular situation, she's presenting that I don't.
You pointed it out in the beginning.
Yeah.
She's a teenager.
Yeah, she's a
teenager. She wants to socialize. So my question is,
yeah. Yeah.
What do we do about the teenagers of our society?
That's a big question. Okay, everybody can meditate on Parvati's question, and tomorrow, since we're out of time. Right. Okay, so Parvati is bringing up the point that just like Sati wanted to dress up, and she was a teenager, and she had these desires, so what about our teenagers in ISKCON? They want to dress the way they do, and they have their desires, and... Yeah.
And I actually was annoyed. But actually,
no, I think it's great. My son would never go to the temple, but now I realize he's starting to get interested in something else. So now he goes every day at night to the temple. I was waiting for that. I said, I'll know when he starts going to the temple, when he starts getting interested in social life. Yeah. So before I said, I'll know. If he's in the temple, then I know now he's changing. I think it's good that, you know, the temple is the place for social life.
Our realization will eventually purify.
Of course.
I didn't understand before. Why don't they go?
I'm happy they're going to the. He's going to the temple.
I didn't understand personally why they would just, like, you know,
go to Mangalarti. Well, just think of yourself as a teenager. Okay,
that's another discussion.
Yes, right, okay. Well, keep your questions for tomorrow, and we'll try to get to them. August Shri Prabhupada.